This is Bob, Dave, and Roar on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Big show coming your way, Monday edition of the program. Ryan Divish will join us at 3:30. Talk some baseball, a little bit of news in baseball. John Clayton with us every day at 4 o'clock. And then we continue our stroll down memory lane. A Seahawks legend, a Seahawks great, Lofa Tutupu, will join us at 5 o'clock. So looking forward to that conversation. Dave, Jim, good to have you guys. Everybody good back there?
Yeah, we're good. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, Bob. How are you, Dave?
Okay.
Good to be back with you guys.
Yeah, good to hear your voices.
Yeah, it's good to be connected, and we'll once again do our best to provide a diversion for everybody, because it's, man, as much as you try to get away from coronavirus news, and I don't want to hear about it, I don't want to see anything on it, it's unavoidable, depending on what TV channel you land on, depending on what website you go to. It doesn't matter what you're reading about, sports, music, movies, doesn't matter. It's all got that connection to it, so it's almost impossible to avoid. So we'll do our best to provide that bit of a diversion for you. And just a reminder, you now have radios in your homes. You got smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker, just play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. Or you can download the app, which is powered by Dubin Law Group. It's free and, again, very convenient when you can't be in front of the radio the way you otherwise would be. So just take us with you, and we'll do our best to keep you entertained. One note, it is National Doctors Day, which I think should be every day until this thing is done, until it's out of our consciousness, because the doctors, the medical workers around this country, to say they're going above and beyond is an understatement. And we got to thank the ones that are taking care of our buddy Taylor Jacobs, who I don't know what his official title is here. It's like he handles all of our digital engagement, videos, things like that in the building, like truly one of the nicest guys you're going to meet in the world. He announced on Twitter this morning that his father has the coronavirus, and he's at Overlake Hospital now. So obviously our thoughts are with him and his family. And I was texting with Taylor earlier today. Sounds like his dad's in great spirits, and hopefully he, like many, many others, will get through it, and it'll be a story to tell.
Yeah, Taylor, just the sweetest guy in the world, and he does so much for the station. And yeah, just texted him good thoughts and prayers for his dad to make it through this thing. So yeah, it's just it really hits home, right, when you know because I worry every day about my parents. They're down in Tucson and just turned 78 and 77, and that's, you know, the group that's getting hit the hardest. So yeah, it's just and when you hear that somebody you know has it or has a father, you know, I saw over the weekend that Bobby Hebert, quarterback with the, I guess he was with the Saints and the Falcons, his father passed away from COVID-19. And you know, there was another a couple of a Denver Bronco alum who also passed away from it at age 60. So yeah, it just really hits home. So yeah, if you can, just think good thoughts and maybe say a prayer if that's what you do for Taylor Jacobs' dad.
Well, and just like you guys, you know, I've had the opportunity to work with Taylor. And Dave, you and I, Taylor produced our show after Jessamine did it for so many years for a while. And so, yeah, and I got a chance to get to know Taylor's dad a little bit and his mom just on a random meeting one time. We took a hike together kind of up in the Renton Highlands. And so, yeah, just a bunch of different things going through my mind about my own mom, my second dad. My mom's 90 now. My second dad, they're both down in Arizona. He's 77. He's got diabetes. And so all these different things going through your mind. But, boy, right now our thoughts are sure with Taylor Jacobs and a fellow Coug, and just rooting hard for your dad, Taylor.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely keep him in our thoughts. And like I said, it sounded like his dad's in great spirits. And, getting great care. And again, it is National Doctors Day, so couldn't thank the medical profession more, from top to bottom, with what they're doing and what they're having to go through and the hours they're working and what they're exposing themselves to. Couldn't be more appreciative of what's going on out there. All right, well, let's do our best to create the diversion that we've become for people out here. And we appreciate everybody that does tune in still every day. And looking for that relief. And no shortage of topics when it comes to the Seattle Seahawks and what they haven't done to this point. And what they haven't done is sign Jadeveon Clowney. He's still hanging around out there. And I guess the question becomes, and Dave, I'll start with you. Is there a deadline, or should there be a deadline? If you're John Schneider and Pete Carroll, do you get together and say, all right, listen, we understand he's trying to wait this out, and we're in a really, really unique circumstance with the coronavirus, and that's having an impact on what we're seeing in free agency. We get all that, but there are other guys out there that could help this team that we're going to have to divert some money their way if Clowney is going to sit on whatever number he wants. And I don't, you know, there are rumors of what he wants, and we'll play some cuts coming up, but do they need to set a deadline that says, all right, he's either with us or he's not with us by this day, and if he's not with us, we go full steam ahead on these other options? And we may have lost Dave. Jim, your thoughts?
Okay, sorry about that.
You
guys hear me okay?
Yeah, now we got you.
I'm sorry, guys.
Did you hear the question?
No, I didn't, Bob. I'm sorry. I just got disconnected there. Jeez.
All right. Well, that's okay. It was long-winded, so I'll shorten it up. If you're John Schneider and you're Pete Carroll, with Clowney out there the way that he is, do you draw a line in the sand? Do you set a date and say, okay, we have to have an answer by this day. He's either with us or he's not with us, because we've got to be able to fill spots. We need to address the pass rush. So we've got to set a date where you still have available free agents who can help you. You got to go after them after this date.
Well, I got to say, that's a great question, because I haven't really thought about that way, because all of a sudden, and maybe they have somebody targeted, maybe it's, somebody like Clay Matthews that, they just, for whatever reason, he fits their system. And, there's a lot more intricate conversations going on about whether, not just looking at stats and watching Clowney play, and same thing with a guy like Clay Matthews, just as an example, that they're, they get a sense for what guy fits into their system. And you might have a guy that's really good and productive, but yet he just doesn't quite go with the way you want to run defense. And we'll never know. They have those conversations in their war room, and when they get together before the draft. So that may be the case. But I just think, in my mind, from what I've seen, and obviously I have about as much information as everybody else. I can watch the games and everything, but it just seems to me that Clowney, whatever you pay him, you're going to get your money's worth. That's the way I feel about it. But, I'm not so sure that, and I know Jim doesn't feel that way. And yeah, maybe they need to do that. I just, going into this, I thought that it was going to be more of an amicable type of, negotiation that, and I really thought that they would have him signed by now, but, maybe he's just getting that kind of sticker shock. And we talked about, him maybe having to sign a deal where he kind of has to come in with his tail between his legs, because obviously the market is not, and that's really all you can say. What I think, that doesn't really matter. Well, all that matters is what the other, all 32 teams think about him. And apparently, it's not, if he was that coveted, he would have gone in that first wave of free agency signing.
Boy, when you sit there and you look at this situation, when free agency started, if you had said, hey, you know what, Jadeveon Clowney, he's still going to be unsigned on March 30th, no one would have believed you, because you thought that he was going to be gobbled up probably in the first wave, maybe even the first day when we got the first name was going to be Clowney. But here we are 2 weeks later. And Bob, to answer your question, I think they need to make a decision pretty soon here. I don't know if they need to make it this week, but I would think by next week they do. Because they got to formulate a game plan for the draft. And the draft, it looks like it's going to start as planned on April 23rd. So now we're just 3 weeks away. So if you don't have Clowney, if you do have Clowney or you don't have Clowney, you got to plan accordingly. So you need to know whether you need to go after guys like Clay Matthews or Benson Mayoa, Michael Bennett. you know, Golden, these other guys that are out there, and you need to cobble a plan together to have pass rushers that might be your plan B if Clowney's your plan A, and it just can't linger on the way that it has. I thought it was an interesting story that Joe Fan from NBC Sports Northwest wrote today, talking about the shortened season, and we all talk about, we know that what the coronavirus has done, where Clowney can't go in and get a physical, and so teams are reluctant to pay him that much money. And it's reaching a point, though, where there's so much uncertainty with these owners and GMs about a 16-game season even being played. Now, we still think that that's maybe probably going to happen, but everything's so up in the air with the coronavirus and the quarantine situation and everything. So do you really want to pay Clowney closer to that $21 million that he wants, thinking that, man, we might not have a full 16-game season? So there's so many variables out there. And I think the Seahawks have reached a point where they need to get in a situation of, okay, this is our drop-dead date here. And whatever it might be, April 4th, April 10th, whatever. But it needs to be something in advance of the draft so they can plan accordingly.
Brady Henderson, who covers the Seahawks for ESPN.com, was on with the Midday Show and talked a bit about the situation with Clowney. Cut number one, just sort of echoing what we were just talking about, he feels like the Seahawks need to set a deadline with Clowney.
I just think if you're the Seahawks, I don't know if you can continue to wait on him forever. You know, if they start seeing their alternatives dry up, you know, other guys, I don't know specifically who they have their eye on, but just say for the sake of argument that it's somebody like Clay Matthews, or if they start seeing those guys, you know, sign elsewhere, then they may have to make a decision and say, look, we just can't wait for you any longer.
Yeah, so, and I get that way of thinking, and listen, I want Clowney back here. Dave, I know you're on board with that. Jim, not so much, but I want to see the guy back here, but the team has to move forward. They can only sit still for so long, and I don't think they're just sitting there staring at the phone waiting for it to ring. I think they've got plan B, plan C, you know, whether that's trades with Ngakoue or Judon, or if it is going to be Everson Griffin and Mayoa or Clay Matthews, whatever their plans are. I think they've got everything in place. I think they've got every contingency. There's no part of me that believes, well, we're going to get caught with our pants down here because we were waiting for him. And, you know, while we were waiting, everybody got snapped up. I mean, Dave, you know those guys. You know John Schneider very well. I've got every shred of confidence that they are dialed in on a timeline, and maybe they do have a drop-dead date. But I think they've got irons in the fire, so to speak, outside of Clowney.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing. They have, you know, a system and a plan, and they have guys ranked a certain way, and it's not going to be the same is what everybody thinks. So, and remember a few years ago they talked about getting back to, you know, their core values after the 2017 draft of, you know, just draft. And I think these last 2 years are going to mean something, but, you know, it's, and we'll get into this later. I kind of did a little bit of a draft. Well, it wasn't a little bit. It was a pain in the ass. It actually took 7 or 8 hours.
But this is Dave's hill to die on.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going into. I did, you know, a draft study, and I compared the Seahawks to five other, you know, like teams, and it basically had to do with the standard was, have they been in the playoffs in the last decade? Because then you're going to, you know, if you're having success and you're winning, you're going to have the same sort of slot where you're drafting, right? You can't compare your drafts to like the San Francisco 49ers, right? Because, you know, they've had over the last 3 years, they've had the second pick, the ninth pick, and the third pick. So, and if you go down and look by round, you know, they were much higher than where the Seahawks drafted. And the Seahawks, you know, they traded back a lot of times, and they got more, you know, they got more players. But later on when we talk about it, I'll just say, I think it's a fair comparison. But, you know, after we talk about it, and I know Brent Stecker and Brandon, son of Augustusson, are going to put it on the website. And we're going to, you know, just see, hey, and I went into it like, what am I missing here? But, and I'll tell you this, though, to not get too far into that, I was just looking at the first round of the draft last year. There was 11 defensive linemen and 4 linebackers, and that's including L.J. Collier. Every single one of them got a sack. And even the linebackers, the 4 linebackers, every single one of them except for L.J. Collier. So,
this isn't helping your case, Dave. you're defeating your own case here.
Well, I know, but I mean, if you look at overall sacks, they're actually, you know, the team that did the best as far as sacks goes was the New Orleans Saints. And the Saints have drafted very well, just to give you a little spoiler there. And the Seahawks actually, you know, over the last 3 years have had 13 sacks, the production. And by the way, I went back and removed any sacks or any production that came from Jacob Martin in Houston, you know, or I did, you know, looked at Kansas City. I took Kareem Hunt, you know, the numbers that he had in Cleveland, because Pro Football Focus or Reference gives you a running total of what they had, regardless of what team they're on. So gotcha. It just shows where they were drafted and what their production is. So yeah, the sack part of it has not been great. Of the six teams, they were second to last. They've had 13. Green Bay's only had 8 sacks, but look, they went and got it done a different way by getting in free agent, you know, the Smith brothers in free agency. So
well, Dave, don't blow all your good material now.
Well, there's so much more than this, Bob, that I'm just giving you the tip of the iceberg right now,
okay.
Which I'm sure everybody's already bored to tears. But
well, good material?
Yeah, we got more material. Jim, you don't have to talk when I go through this whole thing.
That's Jim's loving that. He loves the idea that he's hoping it stretches at least an hour.
Yeah.
No,
absolutely.
No, I'm sitting here. Dave had a really productive weekend. You can tell with all the research that he did. And meanwhile, I'm just sitting there watching Tiger King, all 7 episodes of that sucker, and I'm just wasting my time.
Yeah, I think you probably spent your time better than I did, from what I understand.
Well, we'll let the listeners be the judge of that. And you guys can text in throughout the show. 710-710 is our text line. You can weigh in throughout the show. One more cut from Brady Anderson. Cut number 2. Talking about what he's hearing Clowney is looking for in the way of a payday.
The number I've heard that he's looking for, the number that I've heard several times, is $21 million. And so far, nobody is willing to go that high. So, you know, maybe he eventually, you know, accepts that reality and says, okay, Seattle was, you know, a pretty good situation to be in.
Yeah, and listen, at this point, we're it's all conjecture, it's speculation. We're hearing this, we're hearing that. We're hearing teams are in the $13, $14 million range. He's expecting 21. You know, Dave, as you like to say, I think the truth lies somewhere in between. I think, you know, what he truly expects to get paid and what somebody is truly willing to offer. You know, we haven't heard anything concrete from anybody. We heard about the Dolphins potentially offering him, what was it, 18 and a half a year or something like that. But again, at this point, you're dealing with agents and GMs and team sources that are feeding the media information to create spin and present the story in a certain way. So you kind of have to take all of this with a grain of salt. So I feel like that number is somewhere in between 21 and, you know, 14 or 50, whatever we've been hearing on the lower end.
Yeah. Well, and I just think, like I said, I think you're going to get your money's worth. But, you know, kind of the roundabout point I was getting there, really the only two pass rushers you have from the last two drafts, and you know, and I'm not putting Nas Jones in there because I'm not even sure what's going on with him. They traded away Jacob Martin, but really all you have is Rasheem Green and LJ Collier. That's it, man. I mean, you know, we don't know about DeMarcus Christmas, but I mean, I don't think anybody's much counting on him. So, and whenever you ask Schneider, he'll say, man, you can't have enough pass rushers, and they really haven't drafted that many. I mean, Malik McDowell's out. So, it's got to come from somewhere. And, you know, it just makes me think that maybe they're going to surprise us. And, you know, unless you can move up into the top 15 or 20, I mean, that's where you could get really good pass rushers. The numbers bear that out. But, you know, if you're picking late, I mean, I just don't know, unless you get lucky with a guy like Max Crosby, the guy for the Raiders who was drafted in like the 5th round. He got 10 sacks last year. But for the most part, you know, all the sacks, all the production are coming from that top 20, and they're not in there unless they want to trade up. But, you know, so where does the pass rush come from? Just LJ Collier and Rasheem Green and the guys that you have, Jaron Reed and everything? Or do you go into free agency? I feel like there's going to be some moves to come down the road here pretty soon.
Yeah, well, they certainly have to do something. Everybody knows that. But, you know, the thing about the disparity between what Clowney wants and what we're hearing reported that the Seahawks are offering, it's a lot more than you would think. $21 million versus $14 million. So I'm sure Clowney is just flummoxed by this whole thing, wondering what's going on. But again, like I was saying earlier, the Seahawks have to get this resolved pretty soon. And I honestly, and you guys know how I feel about Clowney, and a lot of people are saying, well, hey, Jim, didn't
yeah,
you watch
you hate
the
him.
Games last year? No, I don't hate him at all. I just
yeah, you
sit
hate
there
him.
And I go, no, I, just to repeat what I've said before, that defense was 26th in the league. And again, I've been betting a lot of dollars to donuts lately, but that defense would be, if you didn't have Diggs on the defense next year or Clowney on that defense next year, you know which one you would miss the most? It'd be Quandre Diggs. I just don't see it with Clowney. And people are always going, yeah, well, Jim, you know, he was injured the second half of the season. He had that core injury after San Francisco. And didn't you see the San Francisco game? And I was like, yeah, I saw the damn San Francisco game. Okay, but the agency, Willie McGinnis from the NFL Network brought that up, too. And that wasn't in the second half of the season. It was in the first half of the season. He had a sack against Cincinnati in the opener. And then he went like six games without really being productive before that San Francisco game came up. So I think there are reasons out there. It's not just me, you know, with sports talk blather here. It's general managers that are thinking the same thing
sure
about this guy, or they would, or no, or
yeah,
they would have already paid him what he wanted. They would have paid him more in the neighborhood of what he wanted. Is all
we'll
I'm getting
get,
at. And I don't even
know if I got my
point across there. But
well, you have, because you've made the same point many times, which is fine. I mean, that actually, Jim, that should have been the topic for your you know, change my mind segment, instead of, you know, the 3-4-4-3 thing. You're just, his overall value should have been the hill you were going to die on. But we'll get into Clowney as this story continues, and this is a completely separate discussion, Jim. I want to get into what you think of his production versus what Dave has seen on film, what I feel like I've seen, because I feel like we're on opposite sides of that, and we will definitely get into that conversation. But for now, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
Former UW head football coach Jim Lambright passed away yesterday at the age of 77.
It's really sad news. And I know Brock is the guy that played under Lambeau. He was a transition guy on that staff forever. But, you know, when I first got into this business and started covering the Huskies, he was the head coach and was... I talked to him maybe twice. I don't even pretend to know him, but couldn't have been nicer, you know, to a young guy who was green as could be in this business. And by all accounts, you read on Twitter and different people sharing memories of him. Nothing but high praise from anybody who came in contact with the guy. Really sad.
Well, yeah, and you guys probably came across him more than I did. I just know he had a Chuck Knox quality about him. And first of all, I think, you know, those tough it seemed like in the 80s and 90s, the Huskies always had a great defense. And I know a lot of that was because of him. But he just had that commanding sort of presence that when you were around him, you knew that that guy was a leader. And, yeah, really sorry and sad to see him go.
Well, yeah, 386 games as a player, assistant coach, or head coach of the Huskies, and coming out of Everett High School. And, yeah, I was really saddened to hear that news yesterday. He was 44-25-1 as the head coach of the Huskies. And that defense, now Graz, I think he was on Twitter today saying that Husky defense in 91 might have been the best defense that Seattle's ever seen, and also including the Seahawks in that. And anybody who remembers that 91 Husky defense with Jim Lambright, you could not move the ball an inch against those guys at times. So it's, again, really sad news to hear that. And like you, Bob, the few times that I talked to Jim Lambright, what a class act and a nice guy. And condolences to his family and all of Husky Nation.
The 2020 Summer Olympics have been rescheduled for July 23rd, 2021.
Good news for the athletes that were going to be a part of it. I've read that everybody that had qualified will still have their spots, so that's great news. You know, could be of benefit on some level if we're going to try to find the silver lining. Maybe anybody that was dealing with any sort of injury or didn't feel they were quite up to where they wanted, they weren't peaking at the right, whatever. Maybe it just gives you another year to train and really, really get to that peak level that maybe you were a little short on coming into the game. So there could be a silver lining here.
Yeah, and it's just nice to see that something's actually scheduled. So, yeah, for those athletes, I'm sure they were on a certain kind of, you know, path of how you train and just going to have to adjust that. But at least there's some light at the end of the tunnel there. And, by the way, it's good to hear Mora's voice. Mora's back on giving us our take too. Haven't heard your voice in a long time.
I'm with you guys on the Olympics, though. I always, you know, I like hearing about things being postponed and not canceled. And the Masters is still going to, they're trying to hold that in the fall. And so with the Olympics next year, yeah, I think that's something certainly to look forward to.
All right, as we said, John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock, as he does every day. Lofa Tatupu, the great Seahawks linebacker, will join us at 5 o'clock. But coming up next, we're starting to see Major League Baseball and the MLBPA put together a little groundwork for the 2020 Major League Baseball season. What's that going to look like? We'll ask Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Get a chance to talk some baseball with our buddy from the Seattle Times. Does a great job covering the Seattle Mariners. He's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is Ryan Divish. Ryan, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Are you you're back now, or you're on lockdown out there in Tacoma?
Yeah, I'm back in the 253, enjoying this nice schizophrenic weather we've been having, where every 2 hours it looks completely different than it was before. But other than that, yeah, back here hanging out. It's been interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're back and healthy and able to talk some baseball with us. I'm seeing, you know, these stories about the idea of Major League Baseball pondering a condensed season, you know, and what I would say to this, Ryan, I want to get your take, is that I can appreciate that they seem to throw everything's on the table. Let's just throw it out there, see what makes sense. We don't know when we can start, so it feels like they've got a number of potential plans in place. It doesn't sound like they're married to any one thing. What's your takeaway from these stories about the compressed season and doubleheaders and all of that stuff?
Yeah, I'll give Rob Manfred some credit, and I mock him a lot, and I think he's kind of a used car salesman in a lot of aspects. But he is willing to listen to all things, all possibilities, and I think that was kind of the thing that they did with this collective bargaining agreement they have for this season as they went in. And they went in with the idea that, look, they didn't know exactly how everything was going to work and how everything was going to play out. And they understood that the situation we're dealing with right now is far from, like, stable. So they were willing to be malleable in a sense of how they want to do things. And I think that's the big thing, because we're dealing with a situation that nobody's ever dealt with before. And they have to have some kind of flexibility to make it work. They weren't going to be rigid and say, oh, we have to have this many games. We have to have 140 games for it to be legit, or we have to do this many things. They just kind of understood that the situation is so ever-changing that they had to be able to roll with it the moment they were able to get cleared and go from there. So I'll give Manfred, Tony Clark, and baseball and the Players Union some credit that they understood that they're not in a situation where they can be hard-headed about this. So they have to understand that this isn't something that they can ever just, you know, they can predict. So they have to be flexible.
Hey, Divish, the Astros scandal kind of went away because of all this. Where were you on that? And are you one that maybe wants to keep it alive? I know a lot of our texters have said, hey, man, don't let those guys get away with this. They're due a lot of criticism. But what was your temperature on that whole scandal, and do you think this is just gonna go away because of this if they don't play this year?
Yeah, I mean it is. It really had disappeared a ton for the Astros, and they were, because every day before all this, that was still the talk of baseball. You couldn't get away from it. And I think once the findings for the Red Sox investigation came out, that was going to only, you know, remind people of the Astros and everything that went wrong. I mean, I think it's still something you have to discuss, and it still has to be something that you have to bring up. I mean, I'm not going to be banging a trash can in the press box and once games start or anything like that, but they have to, it'll come back up. Once you start playing games, once you kind of see the smug look of Alex Bregman and some of those guys out on the field and they start doing things, it will come back. I don't know how. It might be a situation, too, where I think some of the first games may be without fans, so you're not going to have that aspect. But I think once baseball starts and the focus turns to baseball and the games played, that the criticism of the Astros and all that they did wrong will return. And I was somebody that kind of having watched how bad the Astros beat the hell out of the Mariners, and there was a talent discrepancy too, like my old baseball coach used to say about me, I had loft issues, lack of freaking talent. Only he didn't use freaking when he would say that. It was just watching how the Astros beat up on the Mariners. Then you hear these things, and I actually heard them, 2 and 3 years ago, players complaining about that they were stealing signs. You kind of turn your head and say, why do they have to do this? They have all this talent. They have Jose Altuve. They have Bregman. They have Correa. They have Verlander. They have all these players out there. Why do they have to cheat to that level to be good? But, I never understood why they did it. I mean, I understood why they did it. Players will cheat all the time. Like, I understood the whole steroid thing, too, when players did it. I didn't like it, but I understood why they did it. And I think, that bothered me because I didn't think it was necessary for the Astros to be successful.
Hey, Brian, if we do have a season this year, I'm looking forward to seeing Dan Vogelbach, and I mean that in a serious way because I just want to see if he's going to make it this year or not make it at all. And I thought it's interesting that Jake Fraley and Evan White on Instagram, they took some questions from fans, and they both said that Vogie's the funniest guy on the team, so he's got that going for him. I hope that maybe he's not so funny this year and finds a way to hit left-handed pitching.
I don't even know that it's left-handed pitching. I mean, he wasn't hitting any pitching at the end of last season. He was getting exposed by right-handed pitching. I mean, like, you can live with him a little bit if he's not the greatest against left-handed pitching, if he's just okay. But when you're not hitting right-handed pitching and you're a power-hitting lefty and a DH and a guy without a true position, you better figure something out really quick. I mean, a lot of people were kind of wondering who he is or who he isn't. I don't know, and I don't think the Mariners know, and I'm not even sure Vogelbach knows. I mean, I think they believe that little two-month stretch, he's going to be somewhere in that area, not the guy that was hitting about 120 when the season ended for the final 2 months. But, there are some things, some certain aspects about his swing and the way they attacked him, his conditioning, all those things factored into his failures. And then he just became, admittedly, he said he became kind of a head case about it, that he took the failure so personally and he got into his head that it was more about the failure when he walked to the plate than the possibility of success. And once you get into that mode as a hitter, that you walk up there being afraid to fail in a game where you fail, 7 out of 10 times at the best, or you're going to have trouble. So I don't know that they know who he is. Now, I can't sit there and say, what I saw in spring training, he's going to be better. But, talking with him, he said a few things. He talked about hitting against lefties, that he was trying to just hit with so much power against lefties when he should have just been trying to kind of take the singles and the walks when he would get them because, that's not his style to be able to drive lefties. But I think we'll know by the end of the season who he is or who he isn't.
Ryan, always good to talk to you, my friend. Thanks so much for the time, as always, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, take it easy, guys.
There you go. There's Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times. Does a great job covering the Seattle Mariners. And a reminder that we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. It'll be the Angels-Mariners matchup from April 8th of 2014. I know a lot of people have really enjoyed kind of looking back at some of these classic Mariner moments and listening to them, watching them on TV. It's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. All right, ESPN did their annual way too early NFL power rankings. We'll tell you where the Seahawks landed and if we agree with them. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us as he does every day. We'll talk some football with him. You guys can text in throughout the show. 710-710 is our text number. Some good ones on the baseball topic. 360 says, I want a bench-clearing brawl with no fans. Then you see the real fellas. Not sure what the fans have to do with the fight that's out there on the field. I don't know that the fights would be any different with an empty stadium versus a full stadium. Do you?
No, I'll take a fight any way I can get it. I don't care if fans are there or if it's sold out, or it doesn't matter. I just want to see the Mariners actually get into a brawl this year.
Yeah, that's not been their MO for whatever reason. And then one more from the 253. I have hit many Astros in my franchise mode of the show. It's therapeutic. So somebody getting satisfaction on their video game, plunking Astros players. So there you go. All right, you guys, again, can text in throughout the show. 710-710 is the text number. We appreciate everybody hanging with us while you're at home and on lockdown the way we all are. We talked about ESPN doing their annual way too early NFL power rankings. I assume you guys have had a chance to look at this right now. We'll give everybody the top. They're not the top team. I'll give you that right now. The top team is the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, followed by number two, the Baltimore Ravens, number three, the San Francisco 49ers, number four, the New Orleans Saints, number five, the Green Bay Packers, and number six, the Seattle Seahawks. And they give a little blurb on each team, and it just says at the very top, three words, waiting on Clowney. What do you think, Dave? Number six seem apropos, seem too high, too low?
No, I think it's right. I think that's about it. I mean, the team in front of the Seahawks that I think is maybe going to be sort of the sleeper that could be number one is New Orleans. I like the Saints and the way they have drafted, and we'll talk about that later, but and just Drew Brees and the leadership and everything, that just seems like a franchise that's going the right way, and they've had some bad luck in the playoffs, but you know, it comes down to just one game. I'm looking at all these teams, you know, Green Bay, they could have beaten them. You know, I think they can hang with New Orleans. They're a great matchup for the 49ers. And then, you know, the Ravens, they were two giveaways from you know, tying that game anyway. I think they lost that game by 14. And so, yeah, I think it's about right, though. But, yeah, it seems like they are also big, you know, Jadeveon Clowney fans. And again, you know, you were saying earlier, Bob, like you're not making your case. Well, I set out trying, you know, not making a case, just trying to see where I was wrong and what I've been missing. And I think one of the things that I did come away with is that, wow, you got to get some pass rush there. There's definitely, they're lacking there. And I've said LJ Collier and Rasheem Green, I think, will step up, and you'll see Jaron Reed, but, you know, Quentin Jefferson's gone. And so it's got to come from somewhere. So, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with Kendricks as well. But that seems to be the only thing. That, and then you're also banking on a lot of offense coming back off the injury list, which is Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, and then also Will Disley.
Yeah, I think six is okay, though. I looked at that and I thought, all right, they got San Francisco number three, they got New Orleans number four, and Green Bay number five. I guess you could, if you're really optimistic, you could say, well, I know Green Bay beat Seattle last year, but this year isn't last year. So I actually think the Seahawks, you could make a case for them being number five and Green Bay number six. And then you look at the other NFC teams just behind them, seem fair. Minnesota at number eight, Dallas at 11, Philadelphia at 12. Tampa Bay now is number 10. They've gone way up, getting rid of Jameis Winston and replacing him with Tom Brady. So, yeah, a lot is expected, of course, of Tom Brady once he gets here to Tampa Bay.
Well, cut number three, Solomon Wilcots, he was on with the professor this morning. He feels like the Seahawks have improved their defense dramatically by adding Dunbar paired along with Griffin.
You know, I love this move by the Seahawks because I think the world of Shaquille Griffin. And now that they have a cornerback opposite of him who can play with that physical aggression and be really steady in coverage, I think the Seahawks improved their defense drastically with the addition of Quentin Dunbar.
Did you hear that, Jim? He thinks the world of Shaq Griffin. How about that?
Yeah. Who's that guy again, Solomon Wilcots? I agree with him on that. And here's the other thing that you got to hope is going to happen. I mean, even if they don't get Clowney back, and even if they're on this, you know, bargain basement rack trying to get these pass rushers that are still on the market, I think we're going to see an improved pass rush. Dave talks about Rasheem Green and maybe LJ Collier contributing to that, but it should also contribute. It stands to reason, doesn't it? I know I'm oversimplifying this, but if you have a better secondary, you're probably going to have the receivers covered longer, and it's going to give your pass rushers more time to get to the quarterback, hence more sacks, hopefully.
Did you Do you see what he did there, Dave?
We've talked about that.
He didn't acknowledge what Solomon said about Shaq Griffin, who's been a popular target of Jim's.
Well, yeah, what happened there? I thought he was terrible. I thought Shaquille Griffin was awful.
No, did you hear Moyer last week, though? I think I'm along the same lines with Moyer. He likes guys that, you know, make plays, and okay, passes defensed are great, but it's kind of like a quarterback hit. It's not as good as a sack. And passes defense, not as good as interceptions. I just think that if you're as good as everyone says you are, you shouldn't go 31 games without an interception, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, it was weird. At the end of the season, when I looked at his totals, I swear he had three interceptions. And, you know, he did get one where it was taken away by a penalty against San Francisco. But, you know, I just felt like he played well the whole year. But, no, you're absolutely right that I think it's going to be really fun to watch corner. I'm still rooting for Trey Flowers. I feel like Trey I think he's been over-criticized. I loved when we talked to him last year, and Jim, you brought up the fact that, some website had him ranked as one of the, I think cornerback who has the most room, will improve the most or whatever, something like that. And he's like, look, man, I really don't care what anybody says. I'm holding myself to my own high standard. And so, remember, he was in there showing us, watching Richard Sherman. I just feel like he's a guy that's going to learn and get better. But if he doesn't and Dunbar ends up taking the spot, then so be it. But at least you've got competition between, I think, three good players. And we'll see what comes out of that. And, you know, maybe that makes them better. And maybe Dunbar fits really well into this. But, yeah, it absolutely has something to do with, as far as, I said this a lot, that, man, there was a lot of times where you could see that there wasn't really time to even get to the quarterback just because of the coverage was so loose and they just didn't play very aggressively. And with him, maybe that'll give them the kind of competition so they can do that, get up and play a lot of press man and dare people to throw it.
Well, the NFL owners right now are going to be voting on the expanded playoff system. That's actually coming up tomorrow. Sounds like it's a go. Everybody seems on board. Is this really just a formality at this point? We'll see what the professor thinks about that and everything else going on in the NFL. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.